Hey everyone, this is Lindsay Wheelock, and you're listening to the Builder Sessions.
Welcome to the Builder Sessions, a podcast where we chat with your favorite builders.
We get to know them, their stories, and hopefully inspire you to get off the couch and build something cool. I'm Hoff.
And I'm Rosie. And on this episode, we have NHRA drag racer Lindsay Wheelock. We talk about drag racing minivans, quick trips to the grocery store, the psychology of drag racing, and how being open to new things can lead you down some pretty cool paths in life.
Please enjoy our interview with Lindsay.
Lindsay, welcome to the Builder Sessions.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. This was a long time coming, I feel like.
Yeah, it's really, well, we've been back and forth. I've been following you for a bit, and we've been back and forth trying to figure out times and life and kids and trying to juggle everything to get you on here. But so we're really, really excited and happy, grateful that you're here. So thanks so much for taking time to come on the show today.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
So for those of our listeners who maybe aren't into, I don't know, I hate using that, but familiar with the drag racing world, even the car world in general, you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so my name's Lindsay Wheelock, and just a quick backstory. I grew up around all things with motors, engines. My dad was always a general manager for a dealership, a power sports dealership at one time. So I was definitely no stranger to fun and fast things, but I am definitely brand new to being a driver. I am, let's see, at the end of 2019 was my very first time ever down the drag strip. And needless to say, I was hooked after that. And so that's kind of how I got my start in racing, but I've only been doing it for 3 years. So I still very much consider myself a rookie in the industry, but I'm really thankful to be here because I finally found my place in life, and I am having quite literally the time of my life. So
I love that story. I want to hear a little more about, if you wouldn't mind expanding a bit on, so what was that like? So what was that day like when you're thinking, hey, I think I'm going to drag race? Like what? You said you're around a bunch of, you know, automotive enthusiasts your whole life, which is interesting how you never got into it like until 2019. But what was that? Yep. What was that change? What was that like? What happened?
Let me tell you, I was set up. I was scammed. I never, ever signed myself up. I had no desire. The thought had literally never crossed my mind. Maybe deep in my thoughts, back in my thoughts, I had thought it would be really cool if, but every time I even thought, I'm like, no, you're a mom, you don't do that, it's fine, like leave it to your husband or whatever. So anyways, long story short, I was at work, got an email from my husband. He texted me, he's like, you need to check your email. So I checked my email and it says, congratulations, you've been signed up for this drag racing experience. It's a free thing put on by Dodge, and it had my name in that email. Like I signed up, and I'm like, what did you do? And he's like, well, I signed you up. You know, you've just been talking so much about these cars. I just feel like you're really interested. And I just want to see how you do. Try it once. And if you don't like it, you never have to do it again. And so here we are. Obviously I was hooked after that, but I did not do it myself. I would not be here today if it weren't for my husband.
How was that first pass? What was the emotions, the feelings of, you know, you're in this vehicle?
Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. I mean, my youngest kid was like one at the time. So that was scary and also like difficult. I felt like to get away from her. All the kids were there, obviously. But even for that short amount of time that I was going down the track, I had all these feelings of guilt and quite literally really stupid thoughts running through my head. And then of course I felt like I blacked out for my very first run, and I'm like, oh my gosh, were my eyes even open? Like no idea. It was awful.
Did you take a car there? Did you already have a car, or what, like how did that work with the first race?
That's kind of what sparked it. Was my dad had purchased a 2018 Dodge Challenger Demon, And my dad and both my husband and everybody right in the industry was talking how cool these cars are. These demons are track ready. You can drag and drive and all this stuff. So I just was floored. Like I had driven that car on the street and it's quite literally the best car ever. I love it. It's stole my heart. It was awesome. And I just was shocked. I'm like, how have none of you guys raced this thing yet? And so when my husband saw that Dodge offered free entry to Dodge owners to come try out their cars in a safe environment, he kind of took that opportunity and ran with it. It's a really good opportunity for people who are new to the industry too, because there's no pressure to like really know what you're doing necessarily and kind of wing it, you know?
So once you got the, obviously you caught the bug then and there, then what happened? You're like, okay, I'm going to take this car from you. Sorry, it's mine now.
Yeah.
We're starting a race team now.
I knew that would never happen. I didn't ask. I just, I made the mistake of digging myself into this hole deeper. And I said, hey, I just literally had so much fun doing that. Do you think that I could continue racing? And I should know my dad and my husband better. The second I said that, they took it and rolled with it. And they were like, yes, we're building a second NHRA car. It's another Copo Camaro. We're going to throw you in it, but you got to go get your license. And they're like going. And the second I heard NHRA and license, I thought really fast, oh my gosh, what have I done? Because I didn't mean that, right? I just meant I wanted to keep going. I didn't want, like, I would have driven his demon all day, every day, if you let me. But I feel like everyone in the drag racing community can relate when you've tasted that speed and then there comes a place where you're comfortable with that speed and you want to go even faster. And so it was good. It was a good movement forward. It just seemed like it was all happening a little quick. I was scared.
Oh man, I couldn't even, I've personally never been down a drag strip before. I've had a lot of opportunities. I've been on like pit crews, I guess, for people who are drag racing on, you know, like Friday night fun nights and that type of thing. But at the same time, I don't know. I kind of want to, you know. I think it would be.
Oh, you absolutely should. You're missing out. It is like so much fun.
Oh, that's so cool. So when you're when they said that you need to go get your license, and you know, did you? So you obviously went and got what, I want to ask what that process is like getting your NHRA license, but also did you go to any, cause there's driving schools for NASCAR and stuff like that. Did you do anything like that to kind of build your skills? And then how did you get your license from that, if you did, or what was that process like?
Okay. So my, Frank Colley's drag racing school, he travels, but he's like kind of world renowned and has a great program. You can pay. It is a larger sum of money, but the idea, right, is that you go, you have on-track experience for drag racing firsthand and smaller classes with Frank Holly himself. And there's like a special, there's several hours worth of lecture inside the classroom. So I signed up and went and did that. And the misunderstanding there is that you think you pay to get your license, but you pay and you could actually leave there and still not get your license. Like you definitely earn it. You have to prove to him that you know what you're doing and that you're a safe driver and you can follow all these protocol that he has listed in his class. And so it's a very serious, but incredibly informationally packed class that I would highly recommend to anyone that wants to race. So that's where I went. I went to Florida, although he does travel. So they go out to Vegas, they go in the Midwest, they go all over. But Florida was the closest and quickest because I needed to get my license fast. So I spent my New Year's Eve in 2020 doing that. And that was such a cool way to ring in the new year. Also terrifying, though. I'm not going to lie. I was very intimidated because I went from driving my Dodge Pacifica minivan to then the Dodge Demon, okay, which I thought was a big jump. And now I'm going to jump into Frank Holly's like super awesome, super gas car that runs 9 seconds in the quarter mile. And I'm like, okay, you know, no, just for reference, the Demon, when I ran it, was running 11 seconds. And then we slowly chipped it down. It does get into the nines, but I had never gone that fast before. So that is the only form of education and class that I did. And I passed. So it was pretty cool.
Wow. So what does the Pacifica run?
Not very much.
No.
Except when the kids are playing in the front seat and they hit the buttons. And yeah. Then one time I got in and it was reading kilometers and I looked down and it said I was like going 150 or something crazy. I'm like, oh my God, I didn't know the van could go this fast. What happens when you let kids play in the front seat and push buttons? So
aren't they going to do a Hellcat version of the caravan? Did I hear that?
I don't know.
Or a Pacifica or something. I don't know.
It's not the Durango. It's the bigger, the 7-passenger.
Well, no, there's a minivan though. I don't know. Whatever. That'd be kind of cool though.
I would drive it. I would rock that. It would be
just
a great.
Take your family to the strip and keep everybody in the van and just run nine flat.
Or those older caravans with the turbo. Is it 2.2s or something? They're pretty fast.
Wow.
I think.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think they ran like 14s, but still.
Still. You'd still have the time of your life.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as it puts a smile on your face, right?
And that's it. Mm-hmm. So can we talk a little bit about the build? Were you very well versed in automotive and like, did you wrench a lot growing up? And how did that translate or help you in the build of this Camaro?
All right, I'll be honest. I don't claim to be a mechanic. I am far from that. I had not touched a wrench in my life until 2020. So it was all new to me. But my husband is quite literally like the world's best mechanic. I know I'm biased, but he is GM certified, master tech, has all these certifications on electrical work. And the dude knows what he's doing. And he's really good teacher and really patient. But he also gives this much sympathy, zero sympathy, right? Like he's like, all right, you need to take out the transmission, get the trans mount out. And I'm like, what is that, right? And I'm not afraid to admit, I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. So there were a lot of times where we'll call it ignorance or stupidity, whatever where I would ask a question and it actually saved us in a lot of ways. Like there was one time where I'm like, hey, should this be here? And he's like, no, that shouldn't be here. Or, you know, small things like that. And, he just, you know, it takes us a little bit longer when we're doing engine installs or taking one out, because he's educating me as we go. And I am slow as molasses, but I am learning. And his whole idea with that was if he made me be a part of the build, because we did build the car kind of from nothing, that I would be a better driver because of it. I would be able to feel things better or be able to relay information better when the run was over. And I do believe that has helped me quite a bit. And there's still a lot I don't know, but at the same time, I should say a lot I don't know mechanically, but I've learned enough about this class in particular and what it takes to go fast. And so it's weird. I run this fine line of being the most ignorant person when it comes to cars, but also knowing most than the average person. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm somewhere in the middle now, I feel like.
Do you find it like, does it take some time to get to know your car and the different sounds in that? And because obviously there needs to be an understanding of the mechanical part too. Okay, there's something going on here and trying to relay that back to, I guess, your husband or the pit. And, you know, because aren't you constantly trying to get quicker? And how is that like, if I hear a noise and I don't know what it is, it's coming from somewhere. Like, was that a bit of a process to figure out, you know, to learn your vehicle or your race car?
Yeah, I think it is. I'll just give an example. Like this last year I had a vibration in the car that didn't used to be there. I got the Dodge Challenger drag pack and at the end of 21, and I started racing it just this last year. And we went from, you know, having a smooth car to all of a sudden there's this weird vibration. So I'm trying to describe this vibration, right? And my husband's asking me all these questions. Well, do you feel it in your butt? Do you feel it in your hands? I'm like, dude, I feel it everywhere, right? And I'm being honest, I'm trying to describe, but I also will use terms like, it just feels like it's going to explode or something like that. He's like, you can't tell me that kind of stuff. That doesn't help me. As a mechanic, you need to be specific. In what way do you feel like, right? And so I'm learning to rephrase these things as a driver when I feel and experience or hear things. Or like another example was in 2020, right? No, 21, either way. I had a crash, pretty bad crash. And, prior to that crash that same day, our biggest issue is that I was hitting the rev limiter. And so when you hit that, obviously you heard that loud pop or whatever it may be. And so I had this little meeting with the engine builder my last pass of the day. He's like, I need you to stay in it. I'm going to move this up. I promise you're not going to hear the rev limiter. Just stay in it because we want to see what this car is capable of. And I fully trusted this guy. I'm like, okay. And so he knows what he's doing. I go out there. And just before the stripe, I hear this loud pop. And I remember thinking to myself, well, gosh, that's weird. I didn't think I was going to hit the rev limiter. It wasn't the rev limiter. The engine builder was right. It was the collector came off the header. It was not tethered or welded and went through my tire and sent me into the wall at 160 plus miles an hour. And there was no warning other than that pop. Now, looking back, I think I could distinguish that pop between a rev limiter, but because I'm new and I had rev limiter in my mind, I'm like, I'm gonna hit the chip, right? That's what it was. I never for a second thought my freaking tire popped. I was
Yeah.
about ready to hit the wall. But so there is like a lot of experience I think that comes from that. But that can only be learned by firsthand experience. I don't know
Yeah.
if it can really be taught.
And you probably at this point, being part of the build and being able to learn, well, you're learning another language, right? You're learning the language of a mechanic and being a translator from a driver to, translating that to a mechanic. You probably know that car inside and out by now.
I really do. I know it pretty well. I mean, definitely not like my husband, but I would think if you gave me enough time, I could do a lot on my own. I don't know if I would trust and have confidence in my own work. But yeah, I'm getting there. I know that car. I know both cars really well. I feel really, really comfortable in them. So, but yeah, it's definitely another language. And I'm learning you have to be very specific with your terms with my husband. He's always said that. But like just stupid. I'm embarrassed to even admit this. But when we're at the track, I'll be like, hey, what do I call it? Did you put on the battery? And he's like, what? What do you mean? Did I charge the battery? Yes, I charged the battery. I'll just like shorten terms or something. He's like, no, Lindsay. Terms matter. Do you understand? Because if you put a battery on the wrong part or whatever it is, I'm like, okay. But in my mind, I know what I'm talking about, but I'm always really distracted with the kids or something. That's my excuse. So anyway.
Well, how do you balance all that? Speaking of kids, so you're, because we were chatting before, you're a mother of three, you're also a dental hygienist. And
And a
like, and
homeschool.
a homeschooler, a homeschool mom, homeschool teacher. How do you do that? And you're like full, you run a full-time race team. I'm assuming it's full-time. Can
Oh,
you,
it is. Yeah.
how do you
I
dive
don't
into
really know.
that?
I would just say you just fake it till you make it. I feel like I also take my health and my mental state and all that really seriously. So I try to reduce my stress. And 2020 was such a stressful year for a million reasons. And then I added on racing for my first time and homeschooling for the first time. And I was sick. Like I was really sick that year. I had a lot of internal issues. My hair was falling out, like all these things. And looking back, I was stressed. So going forward, I knew that something had to change if I wanted to continue this lifestyle, which I do. But I also don't want to sacrifice the lives of my children. I love the program that we're doing with the homeschool thing. So I've just found a way to make it work. Thankfully, with dental hygiene, I only work 2.5 days. So and then the school, they do technically go to like this hybrid school, but it's still considered homeschool. So they get taught by teachers 3 days a week. And then on Mondays and Fridays, I am able to work with them. And then we just, we're just winging everything. I don't really, you just wing it at life. And that's the best advice I got. I don't know. I just try to balance it and take deep breaths and hold on.
Wow, that's a lot.
It is a lot.
Thought we were
Holy.
busy. Oh,
Oh, it's
man.
a nightmare. It's so fun though. Like
Yeah.
I don't want to change anything about my life. It's fun.
That's the best part, I think, when you're having fun and enjoying everything, right? Sometimes people can get down a rabbit hole with not enjoying their job or don't have any
Yeah.
activities to partake in with, maybe not only themselves, but it sounds like you're doing this as a family. That's going to be a pretty cool experience for you and your husband and your kids. I mean, growing up around a racetrack and the experiences and I guess the experiences that they get from that will stick with them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, that part's really cool. And I don't know if I'll ever fully understand that impact that we'll make on our children, but it's pretty humbling. Like when I look back at videos, when I go to post some content or something, like sometimes I go way back and I'm like, man, my kids have quite literally been born at the track, right? And they don't know any different. So to them, it's just another day. And I'm just any other mom, you know, in their mind, they probably think everyone drives, but it's cool. And it is so much fun. And they are so capable. Like, and we trust them with a lot. The coolest part is, my husband always says, there's nothing that you or the kids can mess up that I can't fix. And he's confident in his work. So that gives us confidence as we learn that it's okay if we mess up because he can fix it. It's not a big deal.
I remember I was working in an auto, like a performance parts place, and my boss told me that one time. He's like, "There's nothing that you screw up that we can't fix." In a
Oh, that's
car
awesome.
or in a dealing with a customer, or if we're like if they're doing, like machining a flywheel or whatever it is. Like, we can fix this. It's okay. Like, no one's dying from this.
Really
Like,
reassuring.
I know. And it's such a confidence boost. And I think that's important to hear that from like a mentor type person in your life.
Yeah,
So
it is.
so your dad and your husband, were there any other mentor type inspiring people that helped you along in your journey?
Definitely, no one necessarily inspired me to race because I never felt like any females in the industry, I didn't feel related, like I could relate to, right? I felt like they grew up in it and they're badass because that's what they do, right? But my story is a little backwards. So, but as I started, right, like I got a lot of motivation from Leah Pruitt. She really gave me a lot of helpful tips and pointers and confidence because she just carries herself with such confidence. And she kind of has the opposite story of me growing up in it and then doing it her entire life. And she has to present herself in a different way, right? She's grown up around all these men in an industry where, you know, now there's a lot of females, but at the time she was like at the forefront, I feel like, in a lot of ways. And so she just comes with this different kind of confidence, which really helped me. And Alex Taylor is another one. Emily Reeves, I know you guys have had her on here. She's been super uplifting and so kind. And so I have met a lot of awesome people and men too, like my husband for one, I really look up to. Like everything he says, I live and breathe by, especially when it comes to racing. When he tells me something, I listen. Incredible tuners we work with, Patrick Barnhill and Jason Lee. I just feel like I've learned from so many incredible men too in the industry. Jason Line, who drove Pro Stock for years in NHRA. Like I have learned from quite literally some of the best people in the industry, which blows my mind.
Yeah, some of your heroes almost.
Yeah, it's like not many people can say that they've learned from the best, Frank Holley, you know, all these things. It's like I have got a lot of really good influence. So yes, I owe a lot to a lot of people.
That's cool.
And you still consider yourself a rookie, and you're dealing, you're involved with all these, people that are very knowledgeable and skilled. And you just have more to grow from that. And, lots of people spend a lot of years, maybe don't. They don't have that mentorship or have that inside knowledge to be able to, talk to people and find out how to, race better or figure out your engine. So being able to have that now must just be like you're on cloud nine, it sounds like.
And it's pretty cool. And I'm a sponge. I listen to everything. I came in really humble and I'm staying humble and I just want to listen and learn and continue to learn from the best for the rest of my life, quite literally. So
I hope the answer to this next question is no, but as a female, have you, well, you came into it pretty recently, but have you experienced, like, has that experience been positive in kind of a more male dominated sport?
it is still male dominated, but when I look and I just scroll right on the explore page of anything, I feel like there's females in the industry everywhere.
Absolutely,
And
yeah.
so for I would never be one to say like, oh, I'll never get the opportunity because I'm not a male. I think that's a crock. Like
Yeah.
now is the time to strike. There are companies that want to work with women because they want to highlight that or they want that for their business or whatever. So I have never felt like I've missed out on opportunities. I feel like if anything, I do get the comments sometimes like, oh, she's only, you know, driving because she's a girl. Well, whatever. That might be the truth, I guess. But the truth is that my dad was kind enough to sponsor me, right? Like, that is another story where people are like, oh, well, daddy's money. Well, whatever. I'm taking the opportunity while I can, okay?
Whatever, so, yeah. Oh, man.
If we rewind back a little bit, like you just mentioned you were involved in kind of a little bit of some automotive stuff, some power sports at a younger age. What was, you know, were you in that dealership lots? Were you around this stuff or were you just, you know, what was it like when you were younger and kind of going through, you know, high school and different things? What were your experiences around the automotive?
I had the best childhood. In high school was when my dad took over the power sports dealership. And so on the weekends, we'd tear it up on a brand new Sea-Doo jet skis and boats. And then the winter, I'd tear it up on a snowmobile and go flying on that thing. And four-wheelers, Rangers, you name it, I've driven it all. And I have such rich memories of doing that stuff. And I would love to provide the same for my kids someday. I just got to get there because that stuff's expensive, right? So baby steps, but pretty good memories on the lake and out in the snow, shredding it up on the snowmobiles. So much fun.
Do you find that prepped you in a way to get into a car and go crazy fast on a track with all that driving experience at a younger age?
I do. I think even though I didn't technically have racing experience, it does. It prepares you to just, I was willing to try anything as a kid, right? And tried it. And so but there came a point in my later, you know, early adult life where I think I quit living that child life and stopped trying new things. And I just, you know, I'd never thought past, okay, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to get married. I'm going to have kids. But I never thought past that. I guess I thought I would die or something. I don't know why I didn't really give that much thought, but there's a lot after that. And as a parent, I think it's really important to get hobbies outside of your children. Your children are no doubt everything, right? But they can consume you in a lot of ways and take you from your spouse and take you from God or whatever it may be. So I feel like it's really important to maintain a hobby. And I lost sight of that. So I'm really thankful I found racing.
That's really, really interesting. A main reason why we started this show is to inspire people to get out and build something or do something cool. And why do you think it is that when adults get to that, they lose that childlikeness, I guess. And like, why do you think it is that they allow themselves to get lost in whatever they have right in front of them, their kids, their, cause that's a, I mean, that's a calling in itself as far as being a parent, but like you said, it is possible to lose yourself in that and to not have like something for you or some sort of hobby. Why do you, how do you think people let that happen? What's the cause about that for that, do you think?
I'm sure it's different for everybody, but for me, I think I was just in survival mode and I never really had a plan outside of, like I said, my goal was to get married and be a mom. And I thought that was like the end goal. I hadn't set goals past that. So, and I hadn't revisited it. So I was in survival mode, like 100%. And so I never, and I think a lot of people stay there. They stay in that fight or flight where they're just trying to get through the day, you know? Yeah. And that's a tough place to be. And there's still days where I'm there. I'm sure you guys are as parents too, with young kids. Yep. You're just like, is this day over yet? Like I can't.
Yeah, this day can take a hike. Yeah.
It's rough.
I think when you get into that survival, that fight or flight mode for so long, it just becomes almost natural. And then sometimes you don't want to, you're so consumed by whether it's, well, we're talking about children. You get so consumed with your family and your kids that sometimes it is hard to look at something because I feel anyway, sometimes that I don't want to take time away from, you know, the kids or the family. But I think when they get a little bit older too, it's a bit easier to, you know, start, for me anyways, to start doing things. And I think it's important when you've been in that, you know, survival mode for so long, it is important to find something for yourself, and whether that's, you know, with your spouse or, and I think it's also important to have something on your own too, that you can kind of focus on and, you know, have an outlet to, whether, you know, it's sports or opera. Like there's so many things that kind of
fill people's bucket up. And
did you say opera?
Opera? Yeah. I mean, there's everything, right? I mean, I don't know.
Such a random example.
Okay.
Underwater basket weaving. Yeah. I mean, whatever.
Underwater welding. Yeah. I think it's...
Sorry.
That's okay.
Hey, now it's
that
okay.
Now that the kids are a bit older, I feel like it's more, you know, trying to find and get back into to things like that. And I think it's important to, for your mental well-being and, you know, the physical part too, to have time away and not be in that survival mode 24/7. Because probably, and this is coming from, you know, a dad, father, but in the, and with the mothers too, that's probably exemplified even more, or magnified more, where, you know, those first year, 2 years, you're on, and, you know, that's
quite literally like your body isn't your own. If you're nursing or whatever, and it's just, I can't even describe that experience. And it's just like, and you know, and then you're trying to give yourself to everybody, and you just feel, you don't even know who you are anymore. Mm-hmm. And I was very much still in the thick of that when I started racing. So I felt like I clinged to it even more. Maybe that was what really sparked my interest. Cause for the first time I'm like, whoa, this is cool. Right. With kids, that's actually more terrifying than drag racing, because there is no coaching. There is no amount of, right? Like, every kid's different, and you're actually influencing another human being in a way that they are responsible and they rely on you for life. Like, what?
Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah. Oh, for sure it is. I just want to go back to when, well, staying in this mindset, but when you said you did that first pass down the track and you were worrying about your kids and feeling bad, and you probably had like a million worst case scenario things running through your mind. What if I hit the wall? But you know what I mean? Like, what about it that, whether it's the safety in a race car or whatever it is, what like helped settle those fears? Cause I think that's a big thing. Like, even for me, when I go, I don't go on big trips for work or anything. Maybe once a year, I'll go like 4 hours away. And then there's still that worst case scenario. Like, oh, what if something happens? And blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Like, what caused you to kind of, you know what? It's going to be okay. I'm safe. If something happens, I'm in this cage. Like, was it the safety stuff? Was it just all the experienced people around you?
In that demon, for my very first run, looking back, it wasn't safe at all. Like, it doesn't have a cage. There is no race seat. I had on a regular lap belt. There wasn't like a 5-point harness. There was no Hans device. Okay. So, not my wisest choice, but, you know, I was just winging it, trying to impress my husband or whatever. I don't know. So I did not have that piece going into it for my very first time. But after getting my license and then moving forward, there was just a certain part of me where I first of all, you learn like a lot of neurological like side of racing in that class to get your license. It was really cool. So and I know like there's like a certain, I could nerd out on this stuff forever, but there's like a science to breathing and your thoughts and how to control all that. And I'm a super whack job when it comes to that. And I'm super into it. So that's what I do. There's a certain way I breathe. There's a certain thing that I do in my mind and certain things I say aloud before I go. And then I pray, like I love the Lord and I pray and I just trust that He's going to protect me. Like, The crash that I was in, like, are you kidding me? There's no way. I wasn't even tightened down all the way, first of all. Number one mistake. I thought I was, but we were rushing and we were thrashing so fast. Looking back, I tightened myself down in that 5-point harness so much heavier than I used to. So I think that had to do with part of my neck injury was I slid too much in the chair when I hit the wall. But there were just so many things in that day that passed that just made me know that I am protected and I am safe. And if nothing else, I was, you know, having the time of my life. And I raised my kids to be really independent. I've had people ask me that. Well, what? And it's always a woman, an older woman will say, well, you have children, honey.
Yeah.
What if?
Guilt.
I don't know, man. Like, what if they got a good dad? They got good. I don't know. I don't think about that. And now after also being in a crash, I realized like that was pretty bad. And I walked away from it. Like, I did go to the hospital, but essentially I walked away and I'm fine. And now I don't skimp on my safety gear. I like really rely on that stuff.
Yeah.
So, but there's a lot you can do. The power of breathing and your thoughts. And if you can control your thoughts, you can, and your breath, you can do a lot. You can do anything.
trusting your team, is that a big part of it on top, knowing that your husband, you know, is a master and you know, you have got a good team around you? Does that help with the thoughts before a race?
Anytime, and this is not a knock to anybody, but anytime something's gone wrong, it's been because my husband and I didn't put the car together ourselves. We've paid, there's been times when we're in a rush or we just don't have the access to the car because it's in another state and we pay to have it done. No one, and this is, again, not a knock to anybody, but nobody's going to care about the assembly and tightness of bolts like the person who's driving it or the person who's married to the person that's driving it. And like my husband said, nobody's going to kill my wife. I am on this. And so now anytime we do get the car, there have been times where somebody else has built it or put it back together. We bolt check it. We go through, and every time we find loose bolts, and that's
wow.
That's scary. Yeah,
that is scary. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but it just shows, like, it's just another day to them, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, your job, what you guys actually do for a living, but
we're teachers, so we're
patients are listening to this, but I'm like, there's days where I'm just going through the motions. I'm just cleaning teeth. It may not be the most spectacular cleaning of the day, but I'm just getting my job done and getting out of there, you know. Yeah. So they say
you shouldn't buy a car on a Monday or a Friday.
Yeah, that's probably worse.
Or get it fixed on a Monday or Friday.
So I don't know. As we're both shop teachers, so I don't know what that says about our practice on Mondays and Fridays.
That's fun.
But so, what's your favorite type of drag racing? So you're like, is it bracket racing or do you like the drag and drive stuff or heads up? Like, what is?
I am not a super fan of bracket racing. My brain can't really comprehend the, I should say this cautiously. I just can't figure it out.
Well, what is bracket racing?
Yeah, I have no idea what bracket. I know what drag and drive is. I don't know what bracket is.
It's like a whole nother world, you guys. Bracket racing is crazy. So, and I might have some of this wrong because I don't know if I've ever fully understood it, but let's say you and I race. You're in the minivan and I'm in the Dodge Demon. Well, obviously we know the Demon's going to whoop on the minivan. So you're going to get to take off however many seconds before me. You pick it like a dial-in time. So I choose like 9:98 for the Demon and you would choose like a 15:68. I don't know. I'm just throwing out numbers for your minivan, right? And so depending on those dial-in times is when the tree goes off. And so I would have to sit there and wait. I'd watch you make it almost all the way down the track. And then when my line goes, I go. And so I believe it's whoever crosses, gets to the stripe first, but doesn't break out of their dial-in. So if I went faster than that 9:98, I would lose and you would win, even though I got to the stripe first. It's so weird.
I never understood the whole
within
breaking
parameters.
Out. You get like your hand slapped for going faster, for hitting like a personal best.
And that's not racing. Like in the history of ever, when has it been, you just want to be the fastest, period. So, and you want to get there first. Like that's just how it was as a kid. Like I'm going to get there first. Yeah. I'm going to get, you know.
Last one here is rotten egg. Yeah, yeah.
Do you both start at the same spot then? It's not like car lengths, like with that show.
Yeah.
Like this or that. Or is it this or that?
It used to be the old one. Yeah. Okay. So you're starting at the same spot and then it's just time-wise.
Yeah.
Is that hard to...
Yep.
It must be hard to watch somebody's light go green and then you just sit there and wait, right?
It's not... Well, I think it is hard for some. It's not for me. I did it a couple times and it wasn't hard, but I just was like, what am I doing? What is the...
You get to kind
I don't
of...
know.
The thrill of the chase might be cool.
Science.
Though. Yeah.
If you talk to one of those bracket racers, there are so many tips and tricks and so many things. Like they put their tire pressure at a certain thing because it gets their reaction time faster. It's a science of knowing your car. If you have a really consistent car, you can do really well. And there's tons of money to be made there. But I just want to be first always. So I'm in heads up. Love that. And I love quarter mile racing. I'm about to do 8th mile racing in our 86 Mustang that we have personally taken on, my husband and I, outside of you know, the drag team with the factory stock showdown cars that we have. So that's my favorite, really.
I love it. What's the fastest you've gone?
I'm also really bad at remembering numbers and I know this stuff matters. Let's see. I think mile per hour is like 173 and let's see, a 792.
That's pretty fast.
It was my last time. So, this new car, so we got Blackbird. Jeff Turk owns this Dodge Challenger. He was like the pioneer in the class, I believe. He was there when this class first started, and he's developed this car for the last however many years. And there's just a lot of history behind this car. Long story short, this car is like tried and true. It's just one of those old reliables. Like, it's just good and it's fast and nobody wants to be lined up against it. Well, he wants nothing to do with the car this year because he's building his Factory X car for the NHRA, which is just like this class, but hyped up a little bit. It's lighter. It's, you know, manual. He's just going to be flying. So anyways, he's allowing us to rent it and I'm going to drive that. And so, excuse me, that car goes 770s at like one high 170s to 180 in the dead heat of summer. So I'm going to mess some people up.
That's amazing.
Do you still get the thrill every time that light goes and you like,
yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. If I think though, I was getting, before my crash, I was getting really comfortable in the Copo Camaro that I was driving, and things do slow down a lot and you see everything when you're used to it because your brain can take in the peripheral surroundings. But anytime you change the car or you change something, for me, it speeds things up again. It feels rowdy. It feels fast again. And I have to tell my eyes and my brain to calm down and focus, or I miss a lot. So like this 86 Mustang, my biggest concern is it will by far be the fastest car I've ever been in. But it's also very important to only run an eighth mile. I don't want to blow up the engine and be hard on it. But when you're going that fast, I don't see anything on the sides, especially for my first couple passes. So my fear is I'm going to go all the way down the track, right? And so my husband was like, okay, I'll just set up the computer so it shuts off at this time so you don't blow anything up. I'm like, thank you. One less thing to worry about just to start.
So spectators, we see it as just cars flying, but as a driver, can you just slow it down? And is it like you're going 40 or 50 or even 30, you know, once you get your brain trained and get in the right process, is it just slow-mo for you?
It starts to feel slow, but it takes many, many passes in that car to feel that for me. It might be different for any, you know, everyone. I'll never forget before I went down my very first time in the Copo Camaro after successfully completing Frank Holly's class, I thought, okay, now I got to get in the real beast, right? Because now this car goes another second faster than Frank's car. So I was terrified. I wanted to cry. I think I probably did a little bit. I didn't let anyone see. But the tuner looks at me from on the other side of the car. His name's Jason Lee. He goes, hey, it's just like going to the grocery. And I was like, what are you talking? I just can't even believe he told me that. But I'll never forget it, because he's not wrong. It's really no different. You got to be so comfortable with your car, and it's no different. And it becomes muscle memory. Everything just becomes muscle memory. It's the same way that you can drive home from work every day and get home and be like, how did I get home? I don't remember driving.
But you're just going a little bit faster though. And by a little bit, I mean a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Wow. Is there any other types of racing you would like to get, you'd like to try? Like, you're involved around the power, your dad owned the power sports dealer. Is there anything, like, whether it's, you know, the side by sides, or are you just going to stick to your jam?
I have kind of vowed to myself that I'll always say yes. I want to try everything, because had I not tried this opportunity, I would have missed out on the best time. So I do mean that when I say that. Now, recently I've had some offers to, you know, go out west and drive someone's desert car side by side out in the middle of nowhere. And it sounds fun. It sounds exciting. Right now, I think I have to decline because I don't know if I'm going to have time. But realistically, I'm really thinking about it. I'm like, I don't know if I want to like break my neck or something. Like, I kind of need to stay on top of my game. I don't want to get injured, right? Yeah. Farting around, trying something new.
Yeah.
When drag racing is my main focus. So,
right.
We'll see.
Well, rally or anything like that? Is there one that you're like, that would actually be pretty cool?
Dragon drives, I think, sound so much fun. I just don't have a car that we could drag with, right?
Mm.
That's kind of my goal. Although time is creeping up, I think it would be really cool to take each one of my kids when they turn 16 on a dragon drive event. Just me and them, or me and them and my husband. But we got to start building now, right? Like, because my oldest is about to turn 10. She reminds me every day she's going to be driving in 5 to 6 years. I'm like, okay.
Wow. No pressure.
You know how fast it goes. It's yeah. crazy.
Yeah. I think dragon drives would be really fun. We yep. just, I was just, I had, we were watching Sick Week, the live stream, yeah. and we had it up on in my welding class at the school the last few days, and kids are just loving it.
Oh, how fun.
there's one guy from our town here in Alberta who's down there, and they're watching, like, all their YouTube heroes are racing Sick Week, and, like, it was That's pretty cool.
That's awesome. That'd be
pretty fun to do.
So, what kind of advice would you have for somebody who wants to get started into racing, or building a race car?
If it's racing, I would just say I would first try it, right? Like, I'm really glad I tried it first. You could have never got me to take in that drag racing class without trying it first. So, and people will say, well, oh, I don't have a race car. Like, you don't have to have a race car. Just take your street car to the closest local track and give it a shot. If you don't like the staging process, and you do realize, like, it's a lot of sitting and waiting. So some people might think it's really, really boring and it's not worth it to them. But that 8 seconds or 7 seconds, I would sit all day to experience that 1 7-second run. It is, to me, it's worth it. So I would say that if you want to race, do that. And the drag racing community is awesome. Like, you don't have to have a crew. You don't have to know what you're doing. Just ask the person that's lining, you know, spraying the water box down where you do your burnout, be like, hey, could you help me? And if you're in a minivan, somebody could probably sit in the passenger seat and tell you. That's okay. And then if you're doing your own build, I would just say start somewhere. You know, people want to get rid of junk all the time. See if you can take someone's junk car off of their hands. Or there's so much information out there on YouTube where, you know, I'm sure you guys too, teaching your students, you can learn so much at home, which is an opportunity that I don't think we had before, right? Before mm-hmm. you had to hope that your dad taught you, or yeah. pretty much your dad taught you, right? Yeah. But now I think there's so much information out there. You just got to get started and don't wait, because you could be missing out on a really good time.
Don't be afraid. That's what I'm hearing is, don't be afraid to take your minivan to the track.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. The minivan's going to keep coming back into this conversation.
We have a Sienna, and it's pretty fast. You can also
they
get
are fast.
You can get a TRD supercharger for it. I got to talk my wife into that.
Yeah.
Or I'll just install it without her knowing. That would be probably dangerous.
How did I get to the grocery so quick?
Yeah.
And seems then, a little bit fast.
And then I could talk her into drag racing and say, hey, it's just like going to the grocery store.
Just like going to the grocery store.
So along that same kind of idea, if someone wants to get started, what specific skill sets do you think are important to develop while getting into drag racing and just that whole community? What kind of skill sets should someone develop first or while they're trying to?
You've got to be friendly, because a lot of people in the community are friendly. And if you're not friendly, nobody wants to help you, right? Mm. So smile. I've learned smiling goes a long way. I've been told I have a really killer RBF. So I try to smile and not have that resting, you know what? So smiling and being friendly can get you a lot of places. And I can't stop smiling when I'm at the track, mostly because I can't believe that I'm even doing it. And like when I get out of the car at the top end, I'm like grinning, I'm crying, I'm so dang happy. And these guys are just staring at me as I'm getting out of the car. And I'm like, they're like, you lost. I'm like, I don't even care. I just had the time of my life. This is the best day. And that's contagious, right? Like that made their day better. And so then they want to help me, you know, with whatever it is. And you just get to know a lot of people that way. The second thing I would say is, like, you gotta be humble. You can't know everything. I saw that tear down several people in the class that I was getting my license in. They were unwilling to learn from someone who is the best, and they didn't pass. And there's a reason for that. And so when knowing that I knew nothing was way easier for me to go in and be like, I'm just gonna listen, right? I wanna learn. So just listen to people, you know, and even if you know they're wrong, just give them the time of day. They just want to be heard. Mm-hmm. Make them feel good. And then I guess the third thing is like you can't quit. You just got to keep going. There's so many times when it does get hard, but if you really want to do it, you got to keep going to see the success. I have been in it for 3 years and I have yet to win a round. Like a round. I haven't even won a race, let alone a round. I won one round, but it was, I don't count it. It does technically count, but the dude tripped up the beams because he didn't have enough brake pressure or something. I don't remember. So I technically won that round, but and that's very defeating. But to me, aside from having a blast, it's just important. Like I'm gonna see it through. We will eventually get a win. We will get there.
You have to go through the mountains and, there's always going to be
Yep.
obstacles and frustration and anger. And I think you need to, and sometimes if it's a bit, it's hard to, if there's a longer delay of maybe getting your first win, sometimes that can get frustrating. But I think, you take each race as it is. And I think the big thing is what you said, having fun. If you can enjoy it, if you can lose a race or go out for a weekend and, still have the time of your life and you're losing, to me, that just is like, okay, this is what
You're in the right.
you're in the right thing. Yeah,
Yeah.
you're doing the right thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
starting out tools, this might be a bit tricky. We talked a little bit before we were on here. Top three starting out tools, which could also maybe be what's your top three or your three tools that you take to the racetrack on race day? What are you, besides maybe taking everything, because you probably need your whole trailer and stuff, what would be
Yeah.
some three
Oh, yeah.
starting out tools?
Let's see. Well, as the kids get older, it's way easier. But tool-wise, like can't live without. Number one is our quick jack. Like we don't have a fancy trailer set up like a lot of people do. We do have an enclosed trailer, which is huge. But so we take those quick jacks. It's just a portable car lift, and so it lifts it up like I think 24 inches off the ground. Again, I'm bad with numbers. It could be, I don't know, way higher than that, but it's enough to get under there and get the job done. That's number one. Number two would be a good fan, right? Like I know that's not necessary to get the car up to speed, but it's very helpful when you've got the kids. And what's another one? We take our toolbox with us everywhere. So our goal is to get kind of funny story. We don't have tie downs to our massive rolling toolbox. So we would just pray and hope every time we went to a race, it wouldn't crush the car when we got there and open the doors. We would like barricade it with tires and jugs of fuel. And it was just so special. It was a special setup. But so my goal is to get like those rolling carts, right? I'm sure there's a technical name, but like the stackable tools. Bins that go on wheels and are a lot safer for travel until we can, hopefully one day get a really nice racing trailer. So I think those are three things that would be really important to take with you.
Thanks so much for taking the time out of your obviously really busy schedule to find a sitter and to come on the show and just share your story with us. And it's been really inspiring, especially just like kind of when you came into it. And it really speaks, it speaks a lot to how open you were to learning new things, but also hopefully inspires some people or everyone who's listening to get out and try something new, because you never know, you might have the best time of your life, as you put it. So as we kind of close up here,
Absolutely.
where can people find you? And if you have anything you want to promote, now's the time.
Yeah, so check me out. I just got invited to Drag Illustrated's World Series of Pro Mod race for the factory stock. I think they're calling it Invitational Race. So that'll be my first time in Blackbird. So you can watch that on Flow Racing or CBS. I think it's going to air it. I don't know if they'll be airing our class. And you can catch me on TikTok. Let's see, Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. On YouTube, we are the Wheelock family. And I'll admit I haven't been super great at posting on there, but I'm trying. That is one thing where I'm allowing that to let go a little bit in the time that we've had off, but I hope to pick it back up and put out a lot of really cool stuff on there. So
And we'll put all the links where you can find Lindsay in the show notes of this episode as well. So thanks again for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And thank you to everyone for listening to this episode. And thanks, Hoff.
thanks, Rosie.
And we'll see you guys in the next one.